Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Sorry I'm a little late to the show, man. That dump wasn't going to take itself. But I did arrive with something that I didn't leave with, which is a giant strawberry margarita.
Whoa!
Just an amount of strawberry margarita that is a guaranteed hangover.
God damn.
Just looking at it, I'm starting to get a twinge of a headache.
No kidding.
You want to get that sweet out of your booze if you possibly can. I think most people recognize that's the secret to avoiding that train hitting you.
Uh-huh.
You can. At least limit it. Like, that's why I can't have 5 tiki drinks in a night. It's not that they aren't delicious. It's not that they aren't too strong. It's the sweet. The sweet really gets you in the end. It's never stopped you, though.
No, never. Never once.
How many tiki drinks could you have, really?
Oh, I've had a lot, man.
I mean, it's hard when you're at, like, Smuggler's Cove or something.
Yeah.
You round the turn after that fourth one. You start eyeing that wood paneling on the floor as a place to crash.
Yeah, that looks very inviting at that point. I don't know. I had a when we first moved to Los Angeles, it was like pretty close to my birthday, and I had a little birthday hang at the Tonga Hut.
Happy birthday. Or whatever.
That was pretty, like, sparsely attended. Like, not that many people I knew. You know, I didn't know that many people in L.A., but I invited everyone I knew. And, like, I've got a birthday that has a holiday conflict. So it really fucks my ability to, like, get a group together most years.
Is that a thing about L.A., though, too, where people say yes and then flake? Isn't that... That's one of the things I heard about before moving here was...
Yeah,
was
maybe.
You can't hold people to plans.
That's like the only time I've actually tried inviting anyone to anything. So
I always tell people that what I'm having is a surprise birthday party for Ben, and then no one shows up to what I'm actually doing.
Wow.
Maybe the variable is your birthday.
Yeah, maybe it's me. Anyways, I bring it up because I had a pretty terrific number of tiki beverages that evening, and I remember that at some point after being at the Tonga Hut, we were at a house party. So I was like in somebody's backyard, and I remember I was up for whatever everyone was doing, but when I got there, they had White Claws, and it was the first time I'd ever heard of White Claws, and I was like,
oh no.
I had my first White Claws, so I had like 2 or 3 White Claws after probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 tiki drinks.
I had an awesome time.
I don't like that order of operations at all.
I was walking around my new neighborhood and I was like, is that the house where that house party was? I think it may be.
Wow, like through the fog of drunken memory it's comes like, the house.
I came around a corner and stumbled upon the scene of a crime.
A social crime,
mm-hmm.
as it was.
Yeah.
I have never had a White Claw.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they're for me.
There's a Topo Chico variant with alcohol in it now.
I trust Topo Chico to make a good beverage. I bet it's good. What I want in my booze is some minerality.
Yeah. You want you want like a old timey 19th century like wellness kind of feeling to your boozy water.
I want the sense of laudanum, mm-hmm. or a laudanum adjacent.
I bet there were laudanum cocktails back in the day. Like, get a little opium in your mixed beverage. Yeah.
The way that there was a place in Seattle that used to make cocktails with tinctures in them.
This one has a poppy seed tincture, wink, wink.
Well, the suggestion of a couple of the tinctures was that, you know, some of them would make you feel a kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of their power was the suggestion of that.
Right.
And that maybe it was just...
You don't want to get placebo laudanum. That's no fun.
The placebo cocktail is no good. I mean, I'm not against a buffer drink by any measure, but I want to believe what I'm getting is what I ordered. You know?
Are well known to be pro buffer. So what possessed you to get a strawberry marg out of the kitchen that is going to be too much for you?
I think it's the classic refrigerator lament. It's that our fridge is full of all kinds of bottles and cans of things, and it just feels like we've had this bottle of Costco strawberry marg in there for too long. I wanted to kill it. And when I poured half of it in, I saw so little in the jug that I was like, well, let's go ahead and take this one to the top. So now I've got my insulated pint glass filled to the very top. There's almost a membrane of strawberry marg at the top of this thing that a spider could crawl across and not sink.
Oh, wow. One thing I really admire about the way you and your wife run a house is that you guys have a lot of beverage options on hand at all times.
Is that a thing? How do you not?
We just don't.
You have that.
No. I may have like one beer and one can of tonic in my fridge at any given point.
I have felt from time to time like that is an onslaught of a question to ask a guest where, like, before a guest arrives, I'm like, this is going to be great. They've got options. But then when the guest arrives, I'm like, would you like this or this or this or this?
Cola, purple stuff, Sunny D. And they always go for the Sunny D.
I realize now that I've inadvertently put someone in a stressful situation where they need to decide.
Oh, because they get analysis paralysis at your plentiful options? You just need, like, coffee, tea, beer, and wine.
Yeah.
Then you're covered, right?
I don't want to be the server that works in the tap room that is asked what kind of beer they have and they have to read off every single fucking one.
Yeah.
Hey, person who goes to a tap room whenever tap rooms open again, don't do that.
Yeah. Tell them kind of like what you're aiming for and they all tell you like two or three things that might get you into that neighborhood.
Maybe go on an adventure. Have something new.
Yeah. Walk up to the bar and say, give me a beer. See what happens.
Just like you're in a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Do the movie order.
The movie order. It's never steered me wrong in a tap room.
No, many different types of beers makes me think of many different types of gach, which is a bit of trivia that we get at the beginning of this episode, Ben. What do you say we dive into that?
Let's do it.
It's Deep Space Nine, Season 7, Episode 11. A show title that has been auto-corrected into Portugal Daughter.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
I love a mail order gift.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the receiving end of a couple of these lately. It's a very sweet thing to receive,
but yeah.
You don't want to be the recipient of someone who's overdoing it. And Esri Dax has been overdone with 51 cases of gach, every variety different.
There are varieties of gach? Oh, yes.
What a self-own by the Dax symbiont. This is interesting to me because I imagine that gach, like oysters, probably has to be shipped with a high degree of rapidity. There's probably a lot of regs around how you do it because it's alive. It needs to be preserved in a certain way. It needs to, you know, the temperature can't shift that much. It can't be in an unpressurized compartment on the transport or whatever. And So you wouldn't think that you would need like tons and tons of lead time for an order of Gach, but that's what's happened here because Ezri is receiving Gach that was ordered by Jadzia.
I can imagine being behind the Klingon at the 51 Flavors Gach franchise where the guy just wants a noodle sample of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So obnoxious.
Yeah.
A lot of murders happen in the line at the 51 Flavors.
Yeah.
Because they're Klingons and they're very violent.
If you get Teleri Kadavid behind you, he's going to tell you, he's going to give you a piece of his mind.
Try one or two. Do not try everything in the case.
It's just cruel to the employee behind the counter. We all have other places to be.
Also, I noticed in the parking lot, your red Volvo was a little bit over the line. So I had to be a little bit over the line. And then the next car that comes in, and so on and so forth.
And why can't I get these little spoons to use at home? It seems like the only place you can get a sample spoon is at a 51 Flavors.
Teleri Kadavid. We suck.
It makes Ezri sick to even talk about this. Ezri, a famously sickened stomach, just at the drop of a hat, she'll get a little nauseous, and she can't even talk about all the varieties.
She can't even, and yet she keeps.
That's Ezri Dax in a nutshell right there.
Right. She keeps listing different kinds of gach. Torgud, Filden, Meshta. And getting so sick to her stomach that she is, like, ready to barf in her commuter mug.
Flush it out the airlock.
And keeps listing. Know your limits, Ezri.
It's a good time for Dr. Bashir to leave the conversation. His excuse is that O'Brien...
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien.
...is due back via transport ship. And I think when you've come back from traveling, the first thing you want to do is Alamo with Dr. Bashir or whatever. Like, don't even put down your fucking suitcase, O'Brien.
Yeah.
I got you a Western hat and some chaps. We're gonna go defend the Alamo.
Yeah. So he's a little distracted, but Ezri keeps listing gachs to the point where she has to, like, check herself out, and Bashir uses that as his excuse to leave as well.
Did you not look at the menu before coming here?
Do you know a couple of flavors you know you already like? Maybe just try those.
I mean, is this your first time or something?
Bashir gets stood up.
Yeah.
You hate to see it.
Yeah.
When those roller doors roll open and then roll shut again, and our buddy O'Brien hasn't walked through them, bad time.
Feels sad.
And what? It's sad on a couple of fronts because Bashir knows what O'Brien's truly been up to. And unfortunately, it rises to the level of needing to tell Ben Sisko.
Yeah.
Bashir tells Sisko that O'Brien has not returned from what Sisko thought was a visit to the parents and is in fact a secret mission. To which Ben Sisko says,
"Doctor, please."
In a very bitch please kind of way. Did you get this?
That's really funny.
The mission that O'Brien has been on is a callback. He's been looking for the wife of Liam Bilby.
Yeah, go ahead.
The man that he met under deep cover.
Yeah. You remember how much Bilby cared about family.
Oh, yeah. The most important thing for Liam Bilby.
Yeah.
Besides doing crime, I mean.
Yeah.
It's number one, crime. Number two, wife of Liam Bilby.
But, you know, when asked, he's gonna move family up to number one position, right. You know, because he would admit to doing crime. But anyways, O'Brien has sort of turned himself into the night, the darkness, and gone on a secret mission to see if he can save Bilby's wife, because he's been like corresponding with Bilby's wife and she stopped answering her emails.
I wonder how Keiko feels about that. You think Keiko has his email password?
Miles, who is this woman?
When Sisko leaves this scene, he goes through the door into ops, and I thought he was going to fall through a hole, because when I saw this, it made me think, when was the last time any scene took place on Ops?
Yeah.
It feels like they already took the set down.
Yeah. Yeah, like that part of the show is over.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, can you imagine a show set on a starship where we don't go to the bridge for many episodes in a row?
If you told me it had been 10 episodes since we've been in Ops, I would believe you. It feels like forever ago.
So they need help because the system that O'Brien went to is not a Federation system. It's kind of outside the law, outside of the purview of Starfleet. They can't give him the jurisdiction crap. So, but they have an advantage because Ezri Dax has family in the Sapporo system, in honor of which I'm drinking a Sapporo beer.
Wow. So Sapporo system is just a great, big, tall system.
Oh, yeah. And doesn't give you a hangover.
It's like a 32-ounce system. That's where New Sydney is.
Yeah. And they ask you if you want the little one or the big one, and the little one's still pretty big.
Isn't that the truth? That's a nice beer.
Ezri's mom lives there.
But it's awkward because while on the one hand, Ezri's happy to do Sisko this favor by, you know, asking mom if she can provide any information about O'Brien's disappearance, she's estranged from her mom in a way that might make that awkward. And we see that awkwardness play out in the FaceTime that Ezri has with her mom later on. It's a classic mom blackmail where she's happy to do the favor just as long as Ezri comes to visit.
Mother, no.
And so that's the pressure that Ezri's on right away.
Moms are really good at blackmail. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Please don't put me in this.
Ezri, goodbye.
So after that 9-minute cold open, Bashir is walking Ezri to the runabout. I thought for a moment Bashir would go with. Why isn't he going with?
He's turned over a new leaf, W/R/T, getting up in people's business.
I think I can answer this question. It's because Bashir can so easily sympathize with Ezri's weird relationship with her parents that he does not want to witness that car crash.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's like, cool. Well, good luck or whatever. Here's a hypo spray for your space nausea.
I don't have any interest in vicariously experiencing something that I can experience myself for free.
I don't know. I feel like Bashir might have preferred to go on this trip if he were an architectural enthusiast, because Ezri's parents live in a Frank Lloyd Wright house built on a cliff overlooking hell. It is all Mordor out there.
Yeah, this is a very industrial-looking planet. I feel like the production was so psyched about what their matte painting looked like that they cut back to the exterior of this house so many times in this episode.
I think if you're building the family homestead on this planet, you got to know it's a pretty bad look to stick it up in the hill overlooking everything and make it this nice.
Yeah.
I think you're asking for some vandalism.
All the, like, industrial serfs that are toiling in your mines below, just looking up at your fucking fancy-ass house, resenting you.
We get a moment to meet Ezri's family one by one.
Yeah. She's sort of fallen out of touch with them because of her joining, and there is a little bit of retreading the, it's been so weird since I got the Dax symbiont stuff in this episode that I feel like by episode 11 with this character we should have been well rid of.
Norvo looks like he could be related to Chris Brenner.
Norvo!
I'm Chris Brenner. Brenner Information Systems. You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner!
He really gave me those Brenner vibes.
That's not far off the mark. Yeah, it's me, Norvo. You know, painting, sculpture, doing the books.
Her other brother is Janelle, who is the blue-collar brother, and you can tell that because he's covered in ash and he's holding a hard hat. You definitely get one of each in this family.
Yeah, Norvo keeps it pretty clean. He's got some paintings up around the house. Ezri's, like, complimenting him on the paintings, and he really just cannot accept a compliment. He really drags himself every time his work is brought up.
Ezri's mom is, I don't think there's another way to put it, kind of a tiger mom. you know?
Is Tiger Mom problematic?
I want to be clear. I'm using it in the non-problematic way, in a way that tiger parents refer to themselves. You can tell she really rules that household in a way that makes people uncomfortable.
I hate your hair.
She's very intense. She's very, like, involved in the choices that her children make, which is interesting, right? Like, the storyline about Norvo is that he is so deep under her thumb that he, you know, he's deferred his dream of becoming an artist in a way, and she's interpreted that as he is, like, he's not an independent enough man to be released into the world.
Right. A sort of failure to launch situation.
Right. But we get the sense that, like, perhaps part of that is that she has forbidden him from launching.
As if the mother has some clamps on the rocket, thus preventing a launch from occurring.
Right. Yeah, she hasn't released the docking ring.
When Mom and Ezri leave, the brothers start discussing a bit of sabotage that's occurred in the mine below.
Workers flung their wooden shoes called sabots.
And the suspicion is that this is an instance of Orion syndication. Everyone knows that after the fourth season, you're eligible for Orion syndication.
Yeah, and that's when the money really starts flowing in.
Yeah.
The Orion syndicate doesn't take no for an answer.
It's kind of a bad situation there. We know that Ezri's mom's used to be the proprietor of the fifth largest perineum mine. I forget what kind of mine it is.
They mine the space between the anus and the scrotum.
Yeah. But now she's the sixth. She's been knocked out of the top five.
So they're taint miners.
Yeah, they're taint miners. Taint dilithium, taint duranium.
Yeah, I mean, that's why that one brother was so dirty.
Yeah, it could get messy down there.
No bidets in New Sydney.
Mm-hmm. They have a...
Oh, you just Adam'd me big time.
It's not New Sydney, that's the problem. It's Sapporo.
Oh.
New Sydney's where Bilby lived, but remember, his family did not live there.
I thought New Sydney was in the Sapporo system. I've not connected all these dots.
It gets very confusing, and honestly, at the end of the day, who gives a shit?
Relax.
But we get a scene where the Tegan family kind of reconnect over dinner. Of course, Ezri's last name has changed to Dax, but this is the Tegan family household. And she's talking about, like, what a crazy adjustment it's been, how much harder it has been for her than most joint trills.
How confusing everything is to her constantly.
Yeah, how she has to, like, look under her bed sheets to decide what gender she is in the morning.
I also have an unfortunate tendency to ramble.
Why are the trills in her family so unforgiving of her experience? I don't understand how they don't get this.
I wonder if you're a trill and you don't live on the trill homeworld, if you just kind of, like, revert to being a standard humanoid. Like, you don't think about the possibility of joining because you're so far from it.
When you're a trill all the way, from your first cigarette to your last dying day.
You're never alone. You're never disconnected.
I thought it was weird that she had to explain this shit to them.
I feel like she's explaining it to them like they're strangers to the concept, but they're just, like, rolling their eyes at her, and
they know, but they just don't care.
Yeah, like, her mom is like, give me a fucking break. You should be here helping me run this company, not off on some kind of Star Trek.
There's that familial hypocrisy going on here, too, where all the shit is being poured onto Ezri's head over, like, why don't you take an interest in the family matters? Like, why haven't you been around or whatever? Where they're the ones that have taken just as little of an interest in Ezri's life or her circumstances, too.
Right. They never come and visit the station.
Yeah.
Somehow the only way for them to spend any time together is for her to, like, put her life on pause and stay there for a long time.
Later that night, Ezri visits the brother that looks like James Spader, and you get to see, like, more of his artwork, and you get the sense that he's a little too much of a polymath for their mother to take.
Yeah.
He likes a lot of things. He doesn't want to just specialize. Why doesn't she get that?
I wonder why artists like personal spaces are always depicted as being so messy in television shows.
Yeah, that is kind of a shorthand, isn't it?
What's that about? The studio is always kind of a cluttered mess. I mean, I know that I know artists that have cluttery studios, but I also know artists that have really neat studios.
There was something missing from this episode between Esri and her brothers, and I think the brothers would tease Esri more than they do. And no one teases anyone this episode. Did you notice that?
Oh, that's interesting,
like,
yeah.
Like, it's all very sincere question and answering, but James Spader isn't like, can I feel the bump?
If only I'd really said that.
Nary a chop is busted.
We gotta have some chop busting here, and that is never the vibe.
I wonder if that's a recency bias from having watched a bunch of Lower Decks, though. Like,
oh yeah,
like that is like nothing but chop busting on that show, mm-hmm. And maybe you just miss it in your trek at this moment.
Well, Chris Brenner Jr.'s hitting the Sari and Brandy pretty hard.
Yeah,
I think you can tell that he's not doing it to chill. He's doing it to cope.
This is not distribution. This is consumption.
He hates the family business, and when their mom walks in the first moment, like she like delegates a bunch of like businessy shit to the two brothers to like establish that she is, you know, a CEO that has a drive and a focus on the biz, like very much unlike Bilby. For her, the business is the most important thing. And, right. You know, like the Norvo is like life on hold guy, but also like, I got to do like a bunch of fucking spreadsheets guy. And we're both artists. We're both basically allergic to spreadsheets. We suck at them.
Hate them. Hate everyone.
We're on the other end of whatever like personality spectrum that is.
I'm not very good, Z.
The next morning, Mom is super upset at Norvo's hangover. And Esri takes the blame. Esri, like a good sister, is like, it was my fault. We were up partying because of me. Don't worry about it.
Blame the party's victim much?
On the one hand, she jumps on the hangover grenade, and then on the other hand, is like, you know he has a drinking problem because of you, right? And all the pressure you put on him?
Yeah.
You're smothering him.
He didn't just drink his ass off last night. He, like, destroyed all of his work. She's a mental health professional. She should, like, check him in somewhere. Like, he is clearly in a very bad way if he, like, destroyed every piece of art he made.
I have a hard time forgiving the episode for one specific decision, which is like we momentarily see what he's drawn on top of a painting, which is like a stick figure jacking off or something. Like it's hilarious. But we come back to this location over and over again, and the painting is resting on a wall behind the desk,
and
the stick figure is cropped out in subsequent scenes, and I so wanted to keep returning to that beat over and over again of like that stick figure in the corner, because it really represents what's going on in the family so well.
You think it's funny?
Yeah, this is one of those arguments where Esri is like, listen, what you've done is you know, painted him into a corner. He feels trapped. He hates this. And her mom flips that shit right back in her face, like, you've been gone for so long, don't you dare come in here and presume to tell me how our family is going when you're not even involved with it. You don't know the first thing about being a mother, which you know, Esri has a great comeback for.
Actually, I have four lifetimes worth of memories about raising children.
It's that guilt-tripping jujitsu of Esri being asked to be a greater participant in her family, and the moment she does, the person asking her to is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you don't get to actually make observations and then share those with me. That's a little much.
That's more than I bargained for here.
Before the argument can reach any kind of conclusion, O'Brien is led into the room by handcuffs.
This is fucking spectacular.
He looks like he's had a rougher night than Norvo. Looks like he's been punched in the face many times.
The secret mission does not go well, Enterprise.
Yeah, we learn right away Bilby's wife is dead.
Yeah.
And this police officer, he does not get along with O'Brien whatsoever. And he sticks around kind of a long time.
Why?
Exactly.
I couldn't really figure this out. Like, I it seemed like Ezri's mom kind of has, she's a prominent enough citizen that she kind of has like special use of the local authorities kind of a thing. But I agree. Like, this character seemed like he should have just been a lineless extra that brought O'Brien in, not in handcuffs. You know, like, we found this guy.
Right.
Like, this is the guy you asked us to look for. But instead, he's like, you know, you're lucky we stopped you from poking around because, like, the Orions could have killed you. But they definitely didn't kill that woman because they don't kill people. That's not how they do things. And it's like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Like, the logic, like, never connects.
I think it may connect only after watching the entire episode when I think you may reach the understanding that everyone has reached Orion Syndication, who works on the planet.
Yeah, that's why they all have those like really fancy cars and like house in the hills.
They get involved in politics after having made all that money.
Right.
Yeah, like I feel like in retrospect, maybe he's got that syndication power.
Yeah, I don't know.
RSVP Bilby's wife, though, who was beat over the head and then thrown into a river.
Pretty fucked up.
We pull a dozen bodies a month out of that river.
They don't agree with the cause of death specifically, but O'Brien tells Ezri about body decomposition over lunch. And that's when you want to do it. His face looks a lot better. It looks like he may have waved a light over it because he's not as swollen anymore.
Yeah, and Ezri's like, oh, we gotta get, like, you gotta get some R&R, like, relax, feel better. And he's feeling great to the extent that when Janelle walks in and asks, like, hey, can you come fix the third piece of sabotaged equipment we've mentioned in this episode? O'Brien's like, yes, awesome, wanted a job. I don't want to go home feeling like this was a total failure.
Puts him to work. That's a free lunch there, O'Brien. Why don't you earn it?
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Meanwhile, Ezri goes and checks in on Norvo, who is clearly both hungover and depressed.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
What shape is Norvo's bed? It looks triangular to me.
It does look a little bit triangular.
It could be heart-shaped.
That wouldn't be insane on Deep Space Nine where the pillows are triangular, so maybe you pick up this, you know, like a pillow is roughly the same shape as a bed.
Yeah.
Just turned 90 degrees.
He gets woken up and then gets therapy done at him right away.
Yeah, he has better defenses for this than almost anybody, though.
Please go away. Let me sleep, for the love of God.
Like, this may be the one moment of chop busting, right? When he's like, don't therapy me. I'm your brother.
She pivots into an appeal of him to come with her back to the station. And he says he's too busy with work to do that.
He needs the vacation that she's suggesting. And he's kind of the opinion that maybe things would get even more crazy if he left, like, and she's making the case, like, hire a fucking accountant, you suck at this, you're not a spreadsheet guy. I think she kind of persuades him by the end of this scene.
I don't know, Z.
Well, think about it.
Back with O'Brien, he has quickly identified the problem with the equipment.
Yeah.
And
nice to see some actual work getting done in the Star Trek caves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I love a classic hard hat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, once you reach apex hard hat, there's no reason to make a new one. You already have the best.
That's as good as a hard hat can get.
There's no one's going to reinvent the hard hat here.
One time I was doing a shoot for CNET, and we were filming something about a lunar rover that was being developed in Pittsburgh, and to simulate the lunar surface, they took this rover to like this quarry outside Pittsburgh, and we're running it on like the, you know, like the regolith like dust at this quarry. And then they gave me a hard hat, and it was a hard hat in the shape of a cowboy hat.
Like, as a prank.
It kind of felt like that. I was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? I'm not a cowboy hat guy.
The thing I love about a Pittsburgh Rover is that it comes with fries inside. I love a hard hat shoot, Ben, because guess what? You don't have to give the hard hat back.
Yeah.
Every hard hat shoot I've ever had sends me home with a hard hat.
That's a free hard hat.
Which is why I have a collection of hard hats.
I was flying back like that night, so I didn't have room in my luggage for my hard hat, but I really wanted to keep it because it was just like, how ridiculous would it be to have a hard hat and the hard hat I have is a cowboy hat?
It's definitely an L.
Enter Thaddeal Bokar, a name straight out of Dungeons and Dragons. Whose melee weapon is commodities brokerage.
Yeah. Because O'Brien says, I wish this part that was broken was a 52J, but it's a 52L. And Bokar enters by going, wish? Did somebody say wish?
The wish is granted. Long live Jambi.
This guy played Jambi on Pee-wee's Playhouse, Adam.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
His name is John Paragon.
Amazing.
What a great name.
I clocked him immediately. I was so excited. And then he has like one scene.
Thaddeal Bokar. I'm a commodities broker.
I felt so ripped off.
Great face. Very threatening manner. Like, he's the sort of threatening where, like, a person who knows a lot about you and you don't know how has.
Yeah.
That's the sort of threatening he is.
Totally. He's, creepily trying to get into business with these people, I would say.
He wants that syndication money.
Yeah, he explains to O'Brien, like, I'm trying to get into business with this mine. And yet, the way he discusses things with them is as though it's going to be their ass if they don't get into business with him.
There is no industrial setting, past, present, or future, that does not require an escort in a situation like this. Thaddeal Bokar just walking around unescorted.
Yeah.
Do you think that might be part of the problem with the with your shit breaking all the time and possibly being sabotaged, guys?
Yeah, just strangers in business suits keep walking in.
Yeah. It's clear that the syndicate is putting pressure on Janelle and the family business.
So O'Brien starts to talk to Ezri about this, like, he's like, hey, like, I got this feeling that there's some dirty tricks being played here. Just being around your family makes me feel like the Orion Syndicate is putting pressure on them. Having observed that from the other side back when I was in deep cover, I am really worried about them, and specifically worried about your brothers, because it seems like they're kind of like maybe some leverage here that the Orion Syndicate has that they're being plied with.
That's the way the Syndicate extorts money from legitimate companies.
Ezri's like really resistant to this idea, right? Like the idea that her mom would be anywhere near a criminal enterprise is basically impossible for her to accept.
At this point, who was your suspect of the family members? The artist brother, the dirty brother, or the mom?
My mind immediately went to Norvo, because Norvo is the exocomp of this episode. They never stop saying the word Norvo.
Yeah.
They've given him by far the most character development, and he also seems from the outside to be the cleanest. Like, I know that they were trying to misdirect us away from Norvo, but I've seen enough Star Trek to know the math of a moment like this.
You're smarter than I am. I was most suspicious of the mom. And it's this scene that did it. Like, the idea that Norvo has every reason to leave and it feels like mom applies the pressure to keep him to stay felt like an evil mom moment.
Yeah.
Who maybe wants to cover her tracks.
I mean, she does like have a sort of evil mom vibe, so I can see where you're coming from. O'Brien looks through the books of Ezri's family company.
Yeah, they've got grill marks on them.
Immediately finds what's going on here. He finds Bilby's wife on the payroll, getting like progressively higher salaries every couple of weeks. It'd be like if we hired Rob and then like started paying him more and more and more. When in reality, what we've done is pay him less and less and given him more and more responsibilities.
That's capitalism, baby.
That's why we got into podcasting, to exploit guys like Rob's.
O'Brien's ability at forensic accounting is positively Ferengi-like. This guy gets to the bottom of things real fast.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm trapped in some kind of Ferengi nightmare.
Maybe hanging around with Rom on the engineering team has some of that has rubbed off on him or something.
The big reveal is that Morica Bilby has been on the payroll. She was on the payroll when she died.
Right.
And because no one told them when they ask about Morica Bilby, Esri and O'Brien can assume that someone is not only lying, but that person is also involved in Morica's death.
He wants to, like, do something about this, and Esri asks him to kind of slow his roll until she can figure out specifically what happened. And I thought that this was going to be, like, there'll be a couple more scenes where this tension is hanging over every moment. But instead, it, like, smash cuts to her having, like, family meeting with her mom and her two brothers and interrogating them about what this was. Why was this woman on your payroll?
It's really interesting how the episode and this storyline hands the baton to Esri from O'Brien.
Like, yeah.
The suggestion up top is that this is going to be an O'Brien story. He's the one that's locked into the Bilby experience. And yeah. It's just really not.
It's an Esri story, and I really like the way they did that. I like that O'Brien is there to, like, you know, give a new clue to move the story along, but it's really Esri's adventure to go on.
That confrontation does not go well, Enterprise, because Janelle explains how he went into hock with the Orion Syndicate.
They came to me.
Yeah, the price of Perineum went down when the Ferengi started their own mine.
The taint does not maintain its value. It's very volatile.
It's an abundant commodity at this point. And that happened right when they had, you know, some bills coming due, and the syndicate kind of took advantage, came in and gave them the bridge loan, but now they owed the mob a favor, and you don't want to owe the mob a favor. Classic blunder.
There's some indignity about this being revealed, because it's presented very much like a, what other choice did I have? You don't want the business to die, right?
They offered us a way out, and I took it.
Which is like the last gasp of every failed capitalist covering up their immoral act.
Right. He was standing there realizing that they didn't have enough money to service their debts, and he said, I just wish we had a little bit more latinum on hand. And Bokar came in and said, wish? Did somebody say wish?
Yeah, mecha leka hi, mecha hi ni ho. And then...
mecha leka hi, mecha latino.
Morn, morn,
morn.
Sweet, morn,
morn,
morn.
In here, buddy.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
The thing is, Mom kind of suspects Janelle. But this is also a moment where it feels like the mom is covering for herself. And that's another time where I felt like the mom was the heavy here.
This is something that I think you and I can relate to. Like, we are now, like, the business owners of the dumb podcast that we make. And we've had a couple times where we found out somebody that we'd, like, gotten, you know, like, we hired an accountant that was bad. And we discovered that, like, late in the game. And there is some friction in admitting you, like, made a bad decision when you made an arrangement like that with somebody. And I think that that's kind of what she's going through. Like, she kind of didn't have her eye on the ball. So she is kind of playing the blame game here, like, and is, like, ripping into Janelle, like, off camera. And, like, they fade all the audio of that argument down. And have Esri just, like, turn and look at Norvo and realize that it was Norvo.
I thought that was a neat sequence because, like, the moment you're thinking methinks thou suspect too much, you get Esri's recognition of the truth. And, boy, that escalates quickly.
I handled a problem that you couldn't. I handled it.
He kind of does the, like Law and Order style confession of the crime. He went over to plead with Mrs. Bilby, saying like, hey, you keep like saying that the salary we're paying you is not enough. It's like eating our business alive. And then he realized like if she was just dead, it would solve all of their problems, which is a very short-sighted way of thinking when you're talking about the mafia, like killing somebody that the mafia wants you to give a bunch of money to is not likely to get the mafia off your back.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
That doesn't get you out of syndication.
Yeah, you did not really solve a problem, Norvo. You made one problem into a different, bigger problem.
Ezri encourages Janelle to leave after the trial. Like, there's a lot of planning around the trial, and it made me wonder how long the trial would take in a circumstance where the suspect has admitted guilt.
Yeah.
But I guess it doesn't take very long to sentence him to 30 years.
Yeah. It's a long time.
Yeah. So back on DS9, O'Brien sits with Ezri in the Replimat, where O'Brien says he got off easy, mostly because he's not in a 200-year mind prison.
So, yeah.
I guess anything is easy compared to that.
Norvo only got 30 years? That's cake. I can do time like that with my eyes closed. And I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Miles. Just refer to it once. It's basically the most significant moment in Miles O'Brien's life, and he never talks about it.
You're gonna love his wild ass hair when he comes out of that jail.
Yeah. Ezri is incredulous about what happened to her family in her absence, and she kind of believes that it was nurture versus nature. Like mom turned him into the monster. And she feels responsible because she wasn't around to stop it. And when she walks out of frame, and that's like the gavel on the episode, I was like, is that what the episode's trying to say? Like, is this episode trying to say go home more? Because if shit's fucked up at home, it's your fault? If so, I don't like that message at all.
Wow.
But did you like the episode, Ben?
You really want to do this here, now?
I did like the episode. I think that Ezri took the wrong takeaway.
Just like me.
But I think that that's what it meant to her authentically.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't agree with her assessment of that. But I think that that's like a sign of a good episode, that you can like see a character come to a conclusion that you disagree with and not feel like the episode was telling you the wrong thing. So I liked it. I liked developing Ezri's family a little bit more. Like, I think that's an interesting way to take Dax as a character, because it's not really something we got to do with Jadzia.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a strong ep. Another pretty far away from Deep Space Nine and the War kind of feeling episode in a row. But I enjoyed watching it. How about you?
I like ending the episode on a main character who may have come to the wrong conclusion. Families are so often a kind of quicksand, and I thought it was interesting to see how Star Trek treats that idea. So
yeah.
I think that's a difficult thing to do, and I thought the episode ably presented many of those pitfalls. But I mean, I don't know. Are we ever going to hear from these people again? It feels like we have known up till now very little or next to nothing about Ezri, and I'm going to assume that this is it. Like, this is all we're ever going to know about her. We just have no time.
Yeah, we're running out of time. We only have like 15 episodes left in this season.
And we got no time for that. We have a war to fight.
Yeah.
We have no time to talk about this episode any longer because we have Priority One messages to read.
That's true. Let's go check them out.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first Priority One message is from Court. It is for Brian. The requested day was Father's Day of 2020. Just going to get that out of the way.
Okay.
Happy, probably belated Father's Day, Dad, now that I'm starting my own family. I'm practicing my dad jokes on She Who Is My Wife. And in parentheses, she hasn't laughed yet. Well, Court, I think that's how you know you got a good dad joke in there.
That's a successful dad joke.
Don't expect any laughter at a dad joke.
You're looking for eye rolls, specifically.
Message continues, I love you tons, and you'll always be the Ben Sisko to my, for some reason, Jake. Court gets it. Court gets it big time.
I like, for some reason, Jake doesn't have any spaces. It's just intercapitalized.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Happy Father's Day, Brian. Sorry our schedule was so packed.
This is just a very, very popular way to send Father's Day messages. The greatest generation.
It sure is. Adam, we have another Priority One message here. This one's from Daniel in Chicago, and it's to Ben and Adam. And it goes like this. What if I told you I could take away your pain? Of course, it will be replaced with a diff kind of pain entirely, but hear me, you don't have to watch Voyager. Instead, I give you Earth, Final Conflict, a Roddenberry brainchild fertilized with inconsistent plots, scene-chewing androgynous aliens, and different cast in Season 5 than Season 1. Pulls the rug right out from under you every time.
I just Googled Earth Final Conflict, and the first thing that popped up was, Earth Final Conflict, what went wrong?
Daniel in Chicago wrote this P1 in a very, like, internet argot, where the word you is replaced by, like, the letter U, and the word your is replaced by you are, and
Roddenberry is... Roddenberry?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you're trying to write persuasive business correspondence, Daniel in Chicago, I think you want to use a slightly more professional tone in your writing.
Whoa. Clapping back. Okay.
I love Voyager. I'm excited about Voyager.
That makes one of us. if you have a professionally written, persuasive bit of messaging to send to me and Ben, or if you've got a father you'd like to send a very late message to, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where both Father's Day messages and appeals to a left turn out of Star Trek Voyager are a great way to support the ongoing production of our show.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Did I ever?
I don't know. Did you?
It's Norvo, obviously.
Yeah. You got very drunk in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, you see how that guy powers through the brandy. Guy's got a real taste for this stuff.
Yeah,
I like his brandy glasses. Those are fun. They're blue. He's got a whole setup. He's got a works for the brandy, and I'm here for it. So Norvo is my Shimoda. What about you?
My Shimoda is Martok.
What?
For nobody comes to his birthday in this episode.
Oh, yeah. I feel like this is a pitch for a Brandon Bird cartoon. No one wants to come to Martok's birthday.
I feel like Ezri really could have played this beautifully by saying, okay, like, I am going to, like, put my cylindrical Starfleet away bag over my shoulder, walk down the hall to Martok's apartment, say, hey, listen, cargo bay 2, 51 cases of Gach, I got it for you. I would love nothing more than to enjoy it with you. But unfortunately, something's come up with work. I've got to leave the system for more time than Gach lasts. So I will be in the Sapporo system. You enjoy that Gach. Happy birthday.
I'm so sad that we're not going to get the Jackass-style Gach eating contest between Ezri and Martok, where, like, everyone in Quarks is like, chug, 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 and they're just going to town on those worms.
Yeah, give me them worms.
Give me a gross episode. That's what I want.
Give me a wet hair kind of City of Lost Children.
God, you ever have gawk come out of your nose?
Ugh. Yeah, you laugh so hard that the gawk comes out your nose.
Yeah, that's gnarly. It's like pulling a hair out of your nose that's super long that you've just inhaled.
Yeah.
That's some rough trade.
Yeah.
Gotta get that gold press lock. Get that gold press lock. Am I right?
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation, or you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves, in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one-size-fits-all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Adam, good Shimoda's all around. Do you want to talk about what our next episode is going to look like?
Got to do that. It's part of the job.
It's going to be Season 7, Episode 12, The Emperor's New Cloak. Cork and Rom risk their lives by crossing into an evil alternate universe to rescue the captive leader of Quark's homeworld.
Wow.
Sounds like Negus in the Mirror Universe. Is the note card pinned to the corkboard there?
I can't believe we're going back. I thought that our last visit to the Mirror Universe was going to be it.
Yeah.
Got to say goodbye.
Yeah.
To the Mirror Universe.
Send it off in style with Wallace Shawn.
Well, we got to give Wallace Shawn a good send off.
Yeah.
We've also got to go over to our game of buttholes, Will of the Prophets, to see how we're going to be experiencing that episode. Ben, we're currently on square 32, a couple squares ahead. We've got a Measure of a Man episode. How do you feel about vehemently arguing the pro or the con of this one. It could happen.
I would measure my manhood against anyone.
If I were to roll a 4, it would give us a Kanar with Damar episode, so.
Shit, dog.
Let's see what I do.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
We have somebody working on a homemade Kanar for us, I believe.
And we've proven that we'll drink Pruno on the show, basically.
Yeah. If you send us alcohol you made yourself, we will try it.
All right. I got the die in my hand. Giving it a roll. And I've rolled a 5.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
I've hopped us over both of those landmines. We're on square 37. It's a regular old episode. We're making up a ton of ground.
Yeah, wild.
With 15 episodes left, I like our chances of making it to the Mournhammer dip. I think we could do it.
It could happen.
We're on our way there.
Could happen. Wow. Well, that will just about do it for this episode of The Greatest Generation. If you like the show, if you want it to continue to exist, support it. MaximumFun.org/join is where you do that. We got to thank a couple of people. Of course, our card daddy, Bill Tilly, who we put on the payroll, is now running the @GreatestTrek accounts on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
Two different, very different follows. I really like that the Instagram account is really an Instagram account and the Twitter account is really a Twitter account. He's doing a great job over there.
Yeah, he really is. We couldn't have afforded to pay him without the support of our friends at DeSoto. You can make sure Bill gets paid by going to MaximumFun.org/join.
That's true.
That's how you do that. The music you're hearing right now, as well as the music you've heard throughout the episode, you know that's Adam Ragusea putting his spin on the Dark Material inspiration that that has been with us from the beginning of The Greatest Generation. Yeah. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which gets those leather pants out of the closet, powders them up, and rolls them on.
You should see the sexy-ass shit the Negus slinks around in the Mirror Universe.
Oh, man, I bet. Really pouring himself in those chaps. Dumps like a truck.
Ears like what?
Can you see my beetle snuff?
May her do my snuff, 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 snuff.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.